The Lore You Know, a show where we chat with some amazing human beings who are storytellers, collectors, and folklorists as we discuss the history of, inspiration behind, and importance of recording and sharing regional tales. And I cannot tell you how excited I am right now to tell you that Les O'Dell is here with me.
Thank you.
Yay! How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How have you been?
I'm all right. Super excited about this episode. Thank you so much for coming on. This is your third time on this show, so I think that we need to get you like a special pin or a jacket or something.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think that should be the case. Or maybe we should reserve it for five, like doing SNL, but still.
Yeah.
We'll make it work. Okay, so for those people who have not listened to the old episodes, first of all, shame on them for not doing so. And people that are not familiar with you, which also doesn't make any sense to me, but for people that aren't familiar with who you are, could you do a brief introduction and let them know your connection to this world of weird?
My name is Les O'Dell. I'm a West Virginia native. I am, I guess you'd say, paranormal investigator, Bigfoot investigator. I just into all things strange here in West Virginia. I try to look into them and been part of quite a few things around the state, you know, as far as like festivals and thing like that, and helped out with a few times on STM. So that's basically it in a nutshell.
Yes. You're also an author.
Yeah.
Yes, I have books here, which our video, the people watching the video can see. West Virginia Cryptids, Indiana Cryptids, and then Old Man of the Mountain.
The West Virginia Bigfoot.
Virginia Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask about all three of these, actually. But your first book was West Virginia Cryptids, correct?
Yes, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And can you tell me kind of the inspiration behind getting together with Mark Randall on that one?
We just wanted to put a book out that it just came up in discussion. Actually, Mark asked me to if I'd be interested in helping or writing the book, you know, as a project with him and him doing the illustrations. And I was like, yeah, that'd be cool. I'm not really a writer. It took some time to, you know, do some of the research and the writing part of it, which are in the book. Basically, it's just some cryptids in West Virginia that have been known, and some that's not known very, very much. And just a short description and like a piece of history about it and stuff. Usually it's right around each one, I think, is 250, 350 words. And yeah, it was just a fun project to do.
Yeah. And then you went on and did Indiana Cryptids.
Yes.
Why Indiana?
Well, Mark lives in Indiana, and we were talking again, and it was like we were on the same page. We were like, hey, you know, let's do one about Indiana as well. So we did, and it was the same thing. We did the research, and he did the illustrations. And Mark, there's a couple of them, and Mark wrote as well. He won't say it, but he did. He wants to give me all the credit for all of them, but no, Mark actually wrote a couple of them. There was a couple he really that he wanted to do.
There's a couple of them that he really, there? And then it cut out. Yeah.
Yeah. There was a couple of them he really wanted to do the story on. So those ones are, I can't remember which ones they are, but he put those together.
That's awesome. So is the set complete now, or have you guys kicked around the idea of adding more states?
We haven't really talked about it. I think it would be really cool. I mean, I've thought about mentioning it to him, but not yet, to do like a book that encompasses each state, like one pretty well known, or maybe not even well known cryptid or creature from each state. I think that'll be a cool one to do. It'll take a little time, but I think that might be a cool one to do.
Yeah. What was the time frame on creating those books?
I think the first one actually took longer. because we really? Went through the whole process of, yeah, we went through the whole process of what size we wanted it. Right. I mean, we went through like, oh, three, four sizes we wanted to do, or no, five. There was, let me think, there was a hardcover and, I mean, not in this one. There's a big one that's actually a spiral bound, like coffee table. There's only two of those in the world. So me and Mark were the only ones that have those. But then, awesome. Then we decided on the smaller books. We decided on the cover, how we wanted the cover, whether we want it glossy, whether we want the pictures are glossy, but I like the feel and the look of the matte cover. And the heavier paper on it. Then we had a hardback. We have a hardcover that's bigger. We can probably still get them, but we don't sell them on Amazon. They were from a different publisher. We'd have to order those again, but we did sell, you know, a good bit of those as well.
And do you still have some that you sell?
I don't have any of the hardcovers anymore now. Then we went through, basically went through and tried to figure out which ones we wanted to, you know, encrypted we wanted to do. And then we talked about we talked about a revised version of adding like, I think four more cryptids and creatures. I think there's 11 in the first one, I believe. And that would bring it up to 15. I don't know if we're going around to doing that, but we did talk about that. And then just the research of finding, you know, some, like I said, some of them are obscure, and digging into local lore and stuff to find the stories about them, the history about them, newspaper articles that might have come out with certain ones. And then I know we wanted to put Bigfoot in there for sure, but I didn't want it to put Bigfoot as a general, you know, a broad brush creature in the book. I wanted some kind of local lore. So that's why I chose the Polecat Monster in the southern part of the state. You know, just to give that that region, I guess, a shout out, because they have their own creature there, and I thought it was a pretty cool story about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Excuse me. So then you have Old Man of the Mountain, the West Virginia Bigfoot that you came out with.
Right.
A collection of various stories. And can you talk about how that came about? Did you, these are from people that have contacted you personally and told you their stories? And
quite a few of them are. Some are some older ones that I found online through different research. It was just a notebook that I'd put together and I've had for quite a while. And through interviews, some of the interviews I did, some of the reports I did, some of the investigations I've done. And it was in a little folder. They put some of them in a folder at the West Virginia Bigfoot Museum. And it laid there and people would read it. And they're like, hey, can we buy this? If we can buy this. And they said, well, it's not for sale. And then a publisher out of Charleston come in and was there visiting, and he seen it. And he goes, I guess he told Laurel, he said, I would like to put this in print. And that just went from there. I mean, they were like, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's fine. And I'll tell people it's not a masterpiece at all. I mean, I know there's grammatical errors in it, because most of the stories or the accounts are in the people's word, the way they spoke, you know, and I didn't change that up. You know, I wanted it to be like that. So I just, it was written to me or the way I took it down as notes. And that's the way I put it in the book. You know, as far as the report side, the ones that are reported, you know, in report form, I mean.
So. Yeah. Well, I think that's important to keep that. It keeps the story as authentic as possible.
Yeah.
So of the stories in the book, is there one that was told to you that when they told you the story, it just floored you, in an experience that they'd had?
It's probably, there's a couple, I don't remember every one of them that's in there right offhand, but, there's a couple that I tell people about a lot. It's one's the one. It's called the Margaret Monster. I just gave it that name for the title, or just for the heck of it, for the story, where a gentleman had just got back from the Vietnam War. He was living in a home. His dad passed away. I mean, many years ago. I think he said his dad passed away. He was like somewhere around 10 or 11 years old. And his mom and sister lived, I know she was older than he was. She still lived at home. She had a couple, some kids where her, through a marriage that had, you know, went through a divorce or breakup or whatever. So she was at home, and they would only go to town once a month for supplies. They lived way back in this hollow. And so they go once a month to the nearest town, and they get food and other supplies. So he was asked to watch his younger nieces and nephews, and he said he agreed. And then for some reason, the pump that ran the water well, there was a pump in like a, I guess you say a cellar on one part of the old farmhouse. It had stopped, and he didn't know why it stopped. And it was across the yard and at the back side of the house. And he wanted to go check it out, but he didn't want to leave the younger kids. So he asked one of his nephews if he would go see what was wrong, see why the pump had kicked off, you know, see if the light was off. Because I guess they had a light in there, see if they lost power or something. His nephew's like, I don't want to go down there. I don't want to do that. And he said, well, I'll stay right here at the door. And the way he explained it to me is there was a door that went out to the backyard, and the farmhouse kind of had like a, almost like an L shape. And the well, the pump was underneath that L shape, and it was across the yard. And he finally gets his nephew to go over to go check it out. And as soon as his nephew starts to turn down the stairs to go into the cellar, he says he sees this arm about 6 feet off the ground or so, or maybe a little higher. I can't remember exactly how high, but come around the corner of the house. He said it was reddish in color, reddish brown, and it had like hair, like 3 to 4 inches hanging from like the forearm, you know, below its forearm. And it had a great big hand. It was a pretty good sized hand. And it went, as it reached around the corner, it was apparently going to grab his nephew by the top of the head. And he yells it. And he yells at his nephew, and his nephew like turns and sees the hand, and he like kind of where he had started down the steps, I guess, and kind of rolled across the little wall and into the yard, and it took off running. And his uncle, once he got back to the house, his uncle went in, and I don't think I put this part in the story, but I do remember telling me they always had like a shotgun sitting somewhere. And I guess he went in and got a gun real quick and ran toward the corner of the house. And when he got around to the corner of the house, he didn't see anything. There was no signs of anything that had been there. I guess there was a field behind the house. He didn't see anything running across the field. So whatever was there was either extremely quick or it just went in a direction he didn't see it, but it was gone before he could even get there. And it was within probably, I'd say within 30 seconds of when this happened. So I talked to him and I asked him, I said, you ever heard of Bigfoot? And he said, no. He said, at the time, I never heard of Bigfoot because he didn't hear about, he's never heard of the Patterson-Gimlin film or anything like that. I said, do you believe it was a Bigfoot? When I told him the description and showed him pictures of what some of these drawings look like with these shaggy, hairy animals. And he said, years later, after he'd seen certain things, to him, that's the only thing it could have been was probably a Bigfoot creature. So, yeah, and I was, you know, honored to get that story because he passed away a few years after that. And I'm just glad I got to, you know, to get it down on paper or even to, you know, have a chance to talk to the man about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't even want to think about what could have happened if it had gotten a hold of that child's head. Goodness. Yeah, that's definitely a disturbing tale. And so you also have historical stories in here that you've gotten from newspaper articles. Can you talk about some of the like databases that you use to find these old newspaper articles or where you might gather them from?
A majority of them, I went online and went to chroniclingamerica.gov. I found, you know, like the old Wild Man stories, a bunch of them on there. Then I would just do just a typical search online, just like, you know, older Bigfoot stories or Bigfoot sightings or Wild Man sightings, and, you know, and just see what come up. And I'd look into different databases, the BFRO. There's another one out west that they, OregonBigfoot.com or something like that. There was actually stories for West Virginia on it. You know, things like that. I just searching the internet as best I could. And sometimes it took a long time to find certain things. And the one that's in there, it's a story that they called the Canyon Monster. It's from the Blackwater Falls area. That was actually something that was reported to John Keel, and John Keel actually did a write up on it years ago, where some younger gentlemen were camping in the Blackwater Canyon area, and one of them went to get wood along the edge of the campsite, and they had a fire going, I guess, and he's collecting wood, and it was dark, and he heard a grunt or a huffing sound, huff sound, and then he feels a jab in his ribs, like a poke, and he turns around thinking it's one of his buddies goofing around, and he's like looking at this thing, you know, like 8 foot tall, dark in color, but they described it as having eyes like the fire of hell or something like that. And
wow.
And this thing takes off running, and they decide that they're going to stay in camp because they didn't want to hike out in the night because they seen this thing. And then the next morning they actually got up and they did find tracks, you know, from where the thing had taken off and run. And I believe that was in like the mid to late 60s in the Blackwater Falls area of West Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't blame him for not wanting to go out after that. Yeah. And what a description of the eyes. That reminds me, I've heard only one story, maybe two, of a Bigfoot that had blue eyes. Have you heard any stories with the blue eyes?
One time. And I don't remember all the details of it. I just remember the lady. That was one thing she said she was really, really surprised by or taken back by. She said it had crystal blue eyes. I said the best way she could describe it was crystal blue.
Wow.
And I can't remember. I think it even might have been white. The Bigfoot itself was white, if I remember the story right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another rare thing. White Bigfoot stories are more rare than the darker colored ones. So overall, if someone were to ask you, like, the temperament of Bigfoot in West Virginia specifically, what would you say they're like?
The majority of the ones I've taken just seems like they're a curious animal. I don't remember exactly if I've ever taken ones that's been extremely aggressive, but it just seems like they're a curious animal, like they're watching, or some of them are just, you know, people seen them by happenstance, whether it was a hunter or whether it was a road crossing or somebody was riding a four-wheeler. There is one out of Wetzel County, but it actually made it onto Sasquatch Chronicles, believe it or not, where a gentleman was riding a four-wheeler and was chased and had a huge rock thrown at him by one of these creatures. So there are, I guess, a few aggressive accounts, but it seems like the majority of them are just like, oh, you know, you're here, I'm here, you know, I'm going to go on my way, or they're just curious, you know, happen to be standing somewhere watching you or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever get reports where Bigfoot and something else are kind of happening at the same time, some sort of anomalous activity?
I mean, there have been the stories where Bigfoot's in the area, have been reported in the area, and people seeing lights or something like that. I experienced that once. I didn't see a Bigfoot, but I did go to a location where there was a Bigfoot supposedly sighted. There's supposedly howls and calls or and whatnot, you know, some vocals, and I asked permission to stay on the property. And this was the sighting was actually up the road. It wasn't even on the property, this property, but I get permission to stay on a certain property. And as I'm sitting on the property in my vehicle, I had a van at the time, I had set up where I could sleep in. I could cook it. You know, if I needed to move, I moved, and I'd go to a different spot instead of breaking down camp. And so I'm sitting in the front seat of the van, and I'm just listening to see if I hear some of these vocals. And I notice off to my left at about the 9 o'clock position, down in the corner of this field, I see like a soft white light, probably the distance it was from me. I'd say probably around softball size, maybe. And it didn't like emit light like it was a flashlight or anything like that. It just glowed to soft white. And it was bobbing, not aggressively, but kind of moving slowly across, you know, from left to right. And I watched it, and I'm thinking it's just there's got to be a light of some sort. And I'm not even thinking about grabbing my camera, my phone or anything. And it disappears. And then I'm still looking. And then within, you know, less than 5 seconds, it pops up about, I don't know, I'd say probably like if it was at the 9 o'clock position when I seen it, went to maybe the 9:30. And then about at the 11 o'clock position, it pops up again, and it just bobbles or bounces or jiggles, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it. It just moves on up. It moves on up, and then eventually just kind of disappears. And I just thought that was odd. You know, that's the first time I've ever seen. I've only seen lights twice, and one time was when I was with you guys. I still have no idea what that was. I mean, I talked to the landowner. And I said, hey, have you ever seen any lights on your property? You know, because he's telling me about the vocals. And he said, no, I've never seen anything like that. And there was a short time later, he actually calls me. He said, you know, when you asked me about those lights, I'm like, yeah. He said, I've never seen lights. He said, but I did experience something strange in that same area a few years back. I was like, what? You know, tell me about it. He said, me and my brother were working on the fence. That same fence line. And he said that divides our property and so-and-so's property. And when you stand at the fence line, if you look up on the hill, there's an old cabin. It's just an old hunter's cabin, you know, like an old homestead cabin or whatever. And there's no underbrush around. It's just big trees, big oak trees, big maple trees. And he said, I'm looking up toward that cabin because he said, I just got the feeling that look up here or you know, like I'm being watched or something. He said, just the weirdest feeling. And there's a big tree on the left side of the cabin, which was probably, if I remember right, when I was there, 20 feet away, maybe 20 feet to the left of the cabin. And he says, this figure, dark collared, leans out from behind the tree to, you know, from like, if it's looking at him, it would lean to the left, that the figure's left, and then goes back. And I was like, was it a Bigfoot? And he's like, I don't think so. He said, it just looked like a figure. He said, I couldn't tell exactly what it was. He said, so I stood there and watched to see if this thing actually moved again. He said, there's no way that this figure thing that was behind the tree could get from behind the tree, you know, without me seeing it. Mm-hmm. He said, within a few seconds, a tree on the other side of the cabin, this thing leans out from the side of, from that tree and looks at it. And he said, there's no way this thing got from one tree to the next without me seeing it. You know, it's not possible. So that's, mm-hmm. that's, you know, that's one strange thing that happened. Then there's a guy that I have not got the chance to go down to investigate, or, you know, mainly because I really don't know how I feel about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I really don't know how I feel about it. I mean, I'll listen to a lot of people. I'll believe a lot of stuff. But by myself, I don't know if I want to do it. You know, he actually got a hold of Laurel at the Bigfoot Museum, and he wanted to talk to somebody. So she forwarded him to me, and he was telling me that on the property he lives on is his aunt's, and she lives on another part of the property, but there is a tree or a stump or something like that. That he says these creatures come out of the stump, like would come out, and like,
okay.
I guess for lack of better words, transform like into a Bigfoot creature, and he would see him walk off. And I was like, well, that's pretty interesting. You know, I said, I've heard other people say that, and that they can do certain things. And I said that even Native Americans say that they come from the trees. Now, that could be taken two different ways. Do they actually literally come from a tree, or do they just, mm-hmm. you know, mean it from the forest? But I listened to him, and he's like, and he told me, he said there was other things too. He said, there's part of the forest, he said, you would see, it looked like the top of the trees were cut off. Like something was, how do you want to say it? Not block, like say the top of the trees were almost invisible and you could see the sky behind them. And it was a straight line across these trees. And okay. then the next day, the tops of the trees are there, almost like something was cloaking in front of them and using the background or something like that.
Right.
And he said there's a consistent humming. You would hear consistent humming coming from the forest when this all this would happen. And mm-hmm. then he told me there was also these little, and he didn't say demons. How do you put it? But these little creatures, like these little.
Like imps or something.
Yeah, kind of like that. Little. He said they were white in collar, but they would carry little like weapons, like tools, and he would also see them around. So he used a word. I just can't remember the word he used, but he said he would see those also. So yeah, that's wow. So, but I haven't went down to actually, yeah. You know, dove into that one yet. So
he's got a lot going on there, though.
right. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I don't know where to go from there.
Yeah.
I'll go with you down there to investigate that, because that seems really interesting. And I mean, it's not to say that it's not possible or anything, right. Because I think when we have odd things, it's usually not an isolated thing. There's all right. kinds of weird stuff happening at the same right. time. So if one thing that's sort of outlandish happens, doesn't mean that there's not five other things right. occurring too.
Yeah.
Oh man.
To talk to him, you know, when you talk to some people that are a little, how would be nice, a little off the rocker, you could tell it. He seemed genuine. I mean,
yeah,
you know, he's like, hey, this is what's going on. And I don't know how to, you know, say anything else, but that's what I'm experiencing.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, hopefully you get down there someday and not alone, but get down there someday, because that would be very interesting. I can't even imagine seeing something like that. And then having to kind of reform some things in my head to make sense of it.
Right. That's exactly right. Because I was having a hard time of like, you know, making sense of it. You know, I mean, I've listened to some crazy stuff, and that one was up probably at the top. I don't want to say crazy, but odd, strange. You know, just like. You know, right. that kind of, don't think about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if there's something going on with that area in general too.
Yeah.
If there's things happening, not just on that property, but if there's a history to that place, that's interesting. Okay. Well, let's see. We've talked Bigfoot. What about, mm-hmm. Ghosts? Oh, yeah. Les, do you have any ghost stories?
What do you like, my experiences or other people's?
Yeah. Any experiences that you've had personally?
Well, I've told the story many times. I'm pretty sure you heard of why I've gotten into this paranormal stuff. It was something I had happened as a kid. And it was seeing a shadow person when I was a kid. I'll just do a short version of it. We moved into an old farmhouse. I was there for a little while. I would go to bed. I shared a room with my younger brother, and we shared bunk bed or had bunk beds. And I slept on the bottom bunk, and where the bed was at on the left side of the room, it was up in the corner of the room. And I would lay there, and I could look across the room, and I would see like not forms, but almost like shadow blobs, I guess you'd say, or something like that, moving across the wall. And they would go from one side of the room by the door to the other side, directly across the room toward where there's a window. And I'd watch them move, and I'd get scared, try to scream for my dad, couldn't do it, cover my head up, either go to sleep or look again, they'd be gone after a while. Well, that happened a few times. And then one night I was in bed and I started seeing the shadows, and the corner, you know, where our bed was, they started diagonally in the opposite corner, you know, of the room. Well, when I looked in that corner and seen the shadows moving, that's when I noticed one that was standing there that was tall. The house had 10-foot ceilings. And I remember that because it was an old farmhouse. I called it the overseer, is what I call it, you know, came up with, because it seemed like it watched the other ones. This one had a form. This one had a human shape, except for below, like where the waist would be. But up higher, you could see the head, shoulders, the arms. You could actually see the gap between the arms and the sides, you know, when the arms were standing there, or when it was standing there with its arms out, down to its sides, I mean. And from the waist down, it was basically just a solid black shadow or form. There was no legs, you know, or anything like that. And it would, like I said, just seemed to watch these other shadows. And again, I tried to scream for my dad. I couldn't do it. And people over the years, like, yeah, he was having sleep paralysis. You know, that's why he couldn't scream. I was like, no, I was awake. I remember everything. I remember covering my head up. I just couldn't scream for my dad. I was just so scared. I think probably because I wanted to, but, and again, I didn't want to, because I didn't want this thing to, or them or whatever, notice me in the room. And I was only like seven or eight years old. So, it went on, it happened a few times, and I remember three times distinctly it happening. It may have happened a couple more, but I do remember three times. On the third time that I remember it, I got into bed, and I started seeing the shadows, and then I seen the thing in the corner again. This thing standing in the corner. And this time, this is why I tell people that there's no way of sleep paralysis. I actually sat up and didn't just cover my head up. I sat up and I like slid back into the corner where the headboard was in the corner of the room. I slid back in that corner and like was kind of hunkered in the corner. And when I did, it went, this thing looking at the other shadows, it turned its head, looked at me, and within like, seemed like a split second, come from that corner over to the bed, underneath the bunk, you know, it was like ducked under, and came within 8 to 10 inches. I say at least 8 to 10 inches from my face. And it was just right here. And it was, people's like, what did it look like? And I was like, well, it was black. It was shadow shape. It didn't have any, features, no face, or, you know, no eyes, no, you couldn't see anything, no ears, but I could see the head, shoulders, and the arms. But what's the right word? Opaque? Is that what I mean? Something just solid you can't see through. I mean, you couldn't see through it, but it wasn't just like one solid black, like just like a sheet of black paper. This had the inside, the shape had matter. I say almost like dark black smoke. It would move. It rolled around, almost like if you had one of those old oil lamps or old oil or glitter balls, and you'd shake it and you see all that bluish and or blackish and gray glitter. I just went, oh, well. It kind of reminded me of that, you know, years later when I seen those, and I don't know how long it was there, but to me it felt like it was forever. And eventually it backed up, stood up, turned to its left, and for lack of better words, floated or glided, because I didn't see legs, through my mom and dad's room, into my mom and dad's room, turned to the left, and was gone. And I never did see it again. And I think it's because we moved shortly after that. And that was something we did a lot when I was a kid. We moved quite a bit. And I think it had to do with experiences my dad had. with certain things, with you know, things he was seeing, and where when he was in Vietnam War, he come back when there was, you know, he's going through certain things, and I think that was the only way he could cope with it was we moved a good bit, and mm-hmm. but I never seen it again. But I do have dreams every so often, probably once or twice a year, being in that house. And the house is gone now. I've been up there a couple times just to be there and look around. And the house is gone, but I have dreams once or twice a year that there's a force that chases me through that house. I can't see anything, but mm-hmm. I'll wake up, you know, sometimes screaming, crying, you know, just sweating, mm-hmm. whatever, and yeah. go back to sleep. And it starts right where it left off, and it recurs all night. Yeah. So.
So in the years since then, have you come across any pieces of folklore or stories or anything that kind of seemed to help put a name to what that might have been?
No, not personally, but I did share a story with somewhere. I don't remember where it was at. It might've been on my Facebook page. I can't remember where, or it might've been on another podcast. And a lady, this is the first time I have had anybody say that they experienced the same thing. And she said that she experienced the same thing, and what she either called it or she found it somewhere, a description of it. And she called it a smoke demon is what she called it. So I'm not sure if that's mm-hmm. really what it would be, but I, you know, mm-hmm. that's the only time I've ever had anybody say, yeah, I've seen something like it.
Yeah. That's interesting. So that got you started on this path. And then since then, I mean, were you immediately after having that experience looking into weird stuff then?
I started reading any little books I could find as a kid. You know, I liked to read any ghost stories, or my grandma was a storyteller. She tells ghost stories, mm-hmm. or, you know, dad told us stories that were passed down to him. I loved listening to them, and just started, you know, just got into that. My brother, on the other hand, I don't know what he experienced, but he's never said he has, but he's completely opposite. He wants nothing to do with any of this kind of stuff. So, but yeah, it led me into, later on, you know, if somebody wanted to tell me a story, I'd listen to it. And then it led me down to where I was like, you know, maybe I'll start a group. You know, well, what happened is my son's mom and I divorced, and how he was with me on the weekends, and he was like 11 or 12. I can't remember what year. And I said, what do you want to do this weekend? And he's like, cause he's always, you know, with me when we talked about things. He said, I want to go ghost hunting. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. So I went and bought a couple of recorders. I bought a camera, and we started, you know, just going out to old graveyards or anything like that. And that led into us starting a small group, and which everybody did when all the ghost hunter stuff come out. Everybody started that group. So we started a small group. We started doing investigations, and we would do some residentials, and or we'd do some businesses when people would call us, or, you know, then we went to some of the bigger locations. And we really enjoyed it. And then life gets in the way. You know, people have lives, and so the group kind of went on its way. The guys went to, you know, work and family, but me and my son still, you know, did certain things. We'd go out on our own, and then it got to the point where he's like, Dad, I don't know if I can do it anymore. He said, it just certain time. He said, I think I need to take a break from it. He said, when I get into it too much, he said, I start noticing that it seems like there's negative things in his life happening. You know, and mm-hmm. you know, I was like, I know, I understand that. So he got to the point where his interest shifted to like Bigfoot, and he started listening to podcasts and stuff like that. And he asked me, he said, what's your take on Bigfoot? And I'm like, I think it's a cool subject. I said, I never really got into it much. I know about the Paris Gemma film and about, you know, this and this and that, not a whole bunch. I said, but I like it. So I started listening to podcasts and stuff, and I really got into it. And then him and I started had a discussion one time, and we decided that, you know, it'd be cool if we start a Facebook page in West Virginia where people can share their stories, whether it's ghost stories, aliens, or Bigfoot, anything strange. I didn't care what it was. You know, like I said, I've heard some crazy stuff. And well, I think it's been 7 years ago now. And I started it was in October that year of 7 years, like it was either 2013 or 2014. Or not 2013, not sorry, that's too late. 2016 and 2017. And I would put something I found online, or I'd find, you know, something mentioned online about a creepy creature or monster in West Virginia. So I would post that monster of the day or something like that. And people responded to it a little bit. And then I posted, I think it was in the February of the following year, I posted a story about the Fifth Street ghost in Huntington, West Virginia, where this lady supposedly, you know, it's the typical lady in white story. You know, you hear about her and this and that, and you'll see her along the road but people would give her a ride from the bottom of the hill or the top of the hill to one way or the other. And I posted that, and it went crazy. People's like, I've heard that story all my life. I've know people's experienced it. And so we went from like a couple hundred people on the page to within no time we had, you know, 2,000-3,000 people. And then, you know, people started sending me stories about, hey, I've experienced this, you know, this is what I've seen in my home, or, you know, and just tell me stories. And then there was one time, I forget what the Bigfoot story was, or it was one that somebody shared with me, I don't remember which. And I put it on there, and then that started. People started sending me Bigfoot stuff. Hey, I've experienced this in this county, this in this area. And that's when it kind of shifted, seemed like it shifted more to Bigfoot than anything. And people started saying, hey, will you come check out my property? Will you come out, check this out? So that's, you know, or I'd talk to people for hours. You know, there's a lot of them, a lot of times that you can ask my wife, she'll tell you, I was set on a phone or I was set in Messenger for hours. And it never got put on Facebook or anything like that. It was just phone calls, and people were like, you know, it's really nice to have somebody to talk to and share what I've experienced and not be called crazy. And I was like, well, you know, right. I'm not really crazy. You know, I've experienced stuff in my life that people think I'm crazy. So, and I'm not going to judge somebody else like that. So, but that's, I think we kind of got off on a different tangent than what she was wanting, but.
No, that was great. What's the page, Les?
WV,
so can find it.
WV Cryptids and Strange Encounters. People can still send me stories on there, contact me on there. It's kind of changed a little bit now because of Facebook. So it went from just like a page that you could do to now it's like almost like your profile page. So it changed. Mm-hmm. If you do send me messages, I have to go to a completely different app now, link thing. It's called Business Suite or something like, just to see the messages. I don't even get notifications most of the time. So it's kind of, for lack of better words, it sucks. It sucks when I had to go through it. So because they changed a bunch of stuff a couple of years ago.
Yeah. that Meta Business Suite or whatever.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's horrible.
You went in the perfect direction, because I was going to ask you about how all of that started anyway with Case. So you beat me to it. That worked out well. So where's your son now on the whole subject? Is he still into Bigfoot? Is he?
He's still. I mean, I don't know if he listens to it much anymore. Again, life gets in the way. Not in the way. I can't say that. I don't want to say that. His life has grown. He is.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, he's gotten married. He has a daughter now. But yeah, we'll still talk about it and share. And I'll share things that people have tell me or whatnot. And he's still part of like the page. Whenever somebody messages me, he's on there as a co-founder or whatever, he gets the messages too. He just doesn't really say anything about it, jump into the discussions. But he sees all the messages and discussions. So yeah, we still talk about it, and he's all cool with where things have went with me. And you know, he's like, Dad, I would never thought in a million years that you would be out here talking to people, that you'd be doing events and stuff like, you know. And people that know me, have known me for a long time, well, you know, they're shocked too, because I'm an introvert. I'd rather be by myself. I'd rather be at home or out in the woods somewhere. Even like Jennifer, you know, when we first got together and stuff, or after we first got married, and she was going to go somewhere to her mom's or dad's, and mom and dad's or something like that, and she goes, I don't want to leave you. I'm like, hey, I'm good with being, I'm fine. Yeah, I don't mind staying at home. Yeah, you don't have to be here. It's fine. Yeah, and she's been around to, you know, that's who I am. So,
there's something new to your page, just within the last week or so. You're starting a podcast, correct?
I did one episode. It's like this on StreamYard. It's on YouTube. I'm going to have folks come on and talk, you know, whether it's researchers, experiencers, it don't matter what it is. I don't care. You know, I'm not going to limit it to Bigfoot stuff. You know, I just, whatever people want to talk about. And I'm just, for the most part, I'm going to sit back and just listen. I'm going to let them share what they want to share, and, you know, let them, you know, give them a platform. It's already, people are like, hey, I'd like to be on. So I've got several names that I need to try to schedule. So I got enough names now for at least 2 or 3 months that people are wanting to talk. So, and I haven't even got a chance to say, hey, Heather, you want to come on? Yeah.
I'll come on whenever you get through that list. I'll be here whenever you need me. That's so exciting.
Yeah. It's going, I'm enjoying, I hope it does. I mean, popularity, I don't really care, but I hope people understand that it's nothing for me to gain any publicity or popularity. I just want to expand a different direction, a different avenue, give somebody, you know, a different platform to come and talk. And, you know, and it still gets people out there and helps people maybe connect with other people that's had the same kind of experiences. So that's kind of what I want to do. And it's, like I said, it's not going to be just Bigfoot. I had Bill Rigby on last week, talked about his Bigfoot experience. I was going to have Larry Sidwell, and you know, you remember Larry from when he was part of Small Town Monsters, but there was a scheduling conflict up. Something with his brother come up, and so he had to cancel, but he's going to be rescheduled. He's got an awesome story that happened here in West Virginia, his experience. But this week coming up are paranormal investigators out of Huntington are going to come on and talk about their group, talk about their experiences, talk about, you know, all things, you know, paranormal, ghost related, I guess, and what they're into. And one of them, the founder of that group is actually a history teacher, and he's really into the history side of paranormal stuff. So I'm hoping to hear a lot of cool stuff as far as that's concerned. And then Teresa has her page. I can never remember how to say it, but it's Teresa's Haunted History or something like that. She's really, really into folklore, digging into stuff, research, historical research and stuff like that. So I'm really happy and looking forward to see what they got to talk about.
Yeah, I'm excited to listen in and watch and
see
how this goes. I'm excited. I'm so excited. Well, it's toward the end of the show, and as you may recall, I always ask my guests to tell me a story at the end. So do you have a story in mind? If not, I have a request.
Okay, go ahead. What do you want to request?
My request is, you messaged me a few weeks back because you had somebody show up and tell you a story. And can you tell that story? I see you already know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, because I figured that's what you were talking about. I was doing a small little charity event in Clarksburg. It was actually at a comic book collectible, you know, Seth would dig this place. You know, it's got all kind of cool collectibles and stuff, you know, as far as action figures and stuff like that. And they asked me to do, it was for the children's hospital, and they asked me to do, to come up and set up and sell books and talk to people. And I agreed. I was like, yeah, absolutely. You know, so we're sitting there. It was me and Jennifer, and my boys showed up and they were hanging out for a little bit, but, there's two gentlemen that come up, talk to me. One told me about his Bigfoot experience, and this other gentleman comes over to me. After he talked to me about, you know, the book and this and that, and he took my card and he started to walk away, and they turned back around. He's like, and he looked at me, and he goes, you know, I'm a really devout Christian. He said, he said, Jesus, you know, is my savior. And he's telling me all this stuff. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but, or anything, but it's just, you know, trying to be short about how he was telling me about it. But he's like, you know, Jesus, is my savior. And I'm like, you know, I'm saying, that's wonderful. And he said, but I want to tell you a story, and I don't want you to think I'm crazy. And again, without being disrespectful, you could tell that he was, with his accent, he was from, you know, had the, you know, Latino or whatever, however you want to say it, descent, you know. And he's like, I live in Fairmont. And I was like, well, I don't live too far from Fairmont. And he said, well, he said, I just wanted to share this story with somebody. I haven't shared it with anybody. He said, but last May, I think he told me May, I don't think it was March, it was May. He said, last May, he said, I was in my house, and he said, I heard this screaming, like a woman screaming from outside the house. He said, I went over and opened the window. Well, first he told me, he said, he goes, I saw a witch, is what he told me. He said, I saw a witch. I said, what do you mean you saw a witch? And he goes, well, he said, I was in the house. He said, I hear this lady screaming, open the window, or the curtains. And here's this wild haired woman with holding onto the two little trees in my yard, you know, screaming, just screaming away. And just, he said, she had to be a witch. And he said, her hair was all whatever up and wild and just crazy looking. And he said, then she just disappeared. And I'm like, that's really cool. I said, and I looked at him, I said, have you ever heard? I said, that sounds to me more like a banshee. He said, I'm not familiar with what that is. And he said, what is that? And I told him that, you know, the lore of the banshee, how, you know, they seem in some cultures precede the death of somebody in a household. I said, and he almost looked like his knees buckled. He almost looked like he was going to just faint, pass out. And he's like, what? And I was like, are you okay? He's like, yeah. He said a week later, he was stunned. He said, you've got me shocked. He said, because a week later, after I seen this lady, witch or whatever, he said, my mother actually passed away in the house. And I was like, really? And I was like, I just thought, I was like, I didn't know what to say to him. I was shocked, because that was the first time in all the times I've ever talked to anybody about anything that I've actually possibly taken what could have been a banshee story. Mm-hmm. That's it.
That's wild. Yeah, I was so excited when you messaged me about that one. I've not heard any banshee stories either, so, other than folklore.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's wild. That, like, to me, there's no doubt that that's exactly what he encountered.
Yeah.
It's so wild. So wild. Well, Les, thank you so much for being on the show. Can you let everybody know where they can find you, and they can send you their stories and watch the podcast and just keep up with you?
Yeah, you can find the podcast on just WV Cryptids and Strange Encounters on YouTube. That's the same as my Facebook page. You have to put WV, don't put West Virginia. If you want to send me a story, you can either send it through, it's probably easier to send me emails anymore than through Facebook. I set up a page, or set up an email called the name, or the title, or whatever you want to call it, is wvcase304@yahoo.com. That's where I've been getting people contact me now instead of through Facebook. Because like I said, I don't even get notifications on Facebook anymore that I'm getting messages, and it's crazy. Sometimes I get lost, or because if you try to post it to the wall, it doesn't even show on my Facebook page anymore. So used to, it would pop up a visitor post, not anymore. So, and I hate, I've toyed around with probably maybe deleting it, but I'm like, there's so many people on there. No, there's like a lot of people on there that still watch it and watch the page. And I just don't want to do that. So if you got a story, and you know, it doesn't matter if it's West Virginia. I've had people from Florida here recently contact me, somebody from Texas, say, hey, I seen you. Well, what they tell me, I seen you on Small Town Monsters. You seem like a down earth guy, and I would like to talk to you about what I experienced. So, but I don't care where it's from. You want to send me an email and we can, go back and forth through email, or if, you want, I can call you and sit down and talk to you in the best I can. Help you, try to help the best. Awesome. I can, or just listen. Just listen.
Perfect. Well, thank you again, Les, for coming on here. This has been amazing. For anybody listening or watching, if you want to get a hold of me, you can email me, heather@smalltownmonsters.com. Otherwise, until next time. Yay. Les, thank you so much.
Thank you. See you.
Presented by the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. You can find out more about this and other network shows, as well as Small Town Monsters films, books, and Monster Fest 2 at smalltownmonsters.com.